Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Oh, hey, we've got participants. This is awesome. Okay, oh. I am actually going, DJ, I'm going to make you the spotlight because nobody necessarily is here to talk to us or to see us. Okay, spotlight video, there you go. All right.
It's all me, all the time.
All you, all the time. Oh, wow, excellent, this is really cool. I see some names that I know.
Yeah.
I see somebody already is in the chat that says, yay. Hi, yay. Barry! Yay! So, welcome to. Are you still afraid of the dark? Which is also.
Like, what are we calling the program?
We're also. This is a live episode of Turn the Page, which is Syosset Library's podcast, which just hit 100 episodes a few weeks ago, and we had one of our fabulous Syosset alumni, Judd Apatow, as our guest. So we are just completely going with the star-studded summer. And I'm Jessica, and my co-host is
Stacy. Hi.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast. We could hum the theme song, but we're not going to do that. I'll just add it when it goes up. We'll add it. So without any further ado, our guest today is. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is DJ McHale. And I think I'm here because you guys want to talk about a TV show I made 2 or 3 years ago in Montreal called Are You Afraid of the Dark? So I'm a writer. I've been writing for kids forever. And that was one of the things I wrote.
And you have several middle grade and teen horror sci-fi books. You have the Pendragon series, Silo. I think the first time I noticed your name, I was in Children's for a while. The first time I noticed your name on a book, I did a little happy dance and squealed, which probably confused my fellow children's librarians. I was like, I know him. He terrified me and my brother for years.
Well, it's kind of a funny thing that even going back before the days of social media, most people don't know who makes TV shows. I mean, they think the actors make the TV shows, which of course they're a big part of the TV shows and they're the face of the TV shows, but very few people know who actually make, unless there's some big superstar who's the writer, director or something like that. Nobody knows who makes a TV show. But with books, people know who write books because usually people don't even know the names of the books, but they know the author. So once I started writing books, suddenly my name kind of became more known, but then people started doing with like what you did. It's like, wait a minute, I've seen that name someplace before. And it's like, that's the guy that made that show. So I talk, people know more about, people are more aware of the fact that I made that show, I think because of my books.
Which is fabulous.
Sure, it's okay by me.
And so one of the best things about this episode is that the co-hosts are our audience, and we already have Q&A. And chat starting. So we are going to take the Q&A and the chat. We will address DJ with your questions. Please.
A lot of people are saying hi.
Hi. Please keep it friendly. Any semblance of hate speech or abusive language is not part of this conversation. It will have you removed from the chat, which we
don't get booted.
Want. You'll get booted, which is not why we're here. So it's fine. So So let's get started. Okay, we have a question from Justin. What happened with Eric after season one of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh boy, we killed him. This is if I knew then what I knew now, I would have addressed Eric leaving the Midnight Society. But at the time, that was the first season of the show. I didn't even know anyone was watching the show, let alone cared about who was in the Midnight Society. So we had 7 kids in the Midnight Society in that first season. The actor, Jacob is his name, he came to me, and for lack of a better description, he kind of wanted a bigger role in the show, which didn't fit with the style of the show. You know, it's like, no, you guys tell the stories and then we go see the stories. So he kind of wanted to do more. So it didn't really make sense. And so, which meant he wasn't really happy just being in the Midnight Society. So he said, you know, and frankly, I directed all those original Midnight Society scenes. There were too many kids. There was like 112 kids sitting around the campfire. And if you only have 13 stories to tell in a season, that means not everyone's going to get two to tell. So I thought, okay, if Jacob doesn't really want to do it, we'll just eliminate Eric. And again, if I knew what I knew now, I would have addressed it even cursorily. I would have said, oh, what happened to Eric? You know, or something like that. I don't know, but we just did it. He just didn't, he was gone. How was I to know that 25 years later, people would be saying, what happened to Eric? I had no idea. If I knew, I'd be answering that question. And I answered a lot. And I learned enough to do it when Kristen and David, the actors, left the Midnight Society. We brought two new on. That was in the third season, I think. Even then, I knew enough to address it. And I had Gary say, well, some of our friends have moved away. That means we have a chance for Nuka. But that was it. That's all you needed to do. And I didn't do that with Eric. I was just like, where's Eric? He was here a second ago. I don't know what happened to him. I did a podcast a couple of days ago and they were speculating, maybe he's the midnight dust now. Maybe he's what's in the bag that they throw on the fire. Oh, I like that. That's pretty good. So what happened to Eric? I don't know. It's up to anybody. I wish I had thought of something to do. I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
It's fine. And just until that question was asked, I completely forgot. I'm like, oh, right, that kid who was there. And then he wasn't anymore.
I should have known better. I mean, we did the second season and we didn't even know. Again, this is going back to, this is before social media, where everyone talks about everything and everyone gets feedback on everything. I had no idea if they said 10,000 people were watching the show or 10 million people were watching the show. I had no clue. All I was doing was in my little bubble, making that show, sending it to Nickelodeon, and then they say, okay, go make some more. So I didn't really have any concept. I didn't get any feedback from anybody. So I didn't know people liked the Midnight Society as much as they did 30 years later. So I live and learn.
Okay, Stacy, you want to grab the next question?
I will. So this is not really a question, but Rob just wanted to thank you for the show. He looked forward to the most growing up. And he uses the tale of the twisted claw to teach the monkey's paw to his English class. So he just wanted to say thank you for that.
Classic.
You're welcome, Rob. Back when we first started the show, Nickelodeon was so nervous about what parents would say that we were scaring their kids. So they asked me, they said, as best as you can you base stories on literary antecedents? So I actually wrote three scripts before the show was even picked up for Nickelodeon, because they kept asking for more scripts to prove that it could be done. One of the scripts I wrote was The Tale of the Twisted Claw, based on the monkey's paw, because it was a literary antecedent. And I think, when I think back on it now, I had three scripts written. And when they decided, they say, okay, I want you to make a pilot. I'm like, which one do you want? Take your pick. They picked The Twisted Claw because it was a literary antecedent. It was the monkey's paw. So I think now, as it turns out, they didn't have to worry about that, because parents did not show up at their door with pitchforks and torches and trying to beat down the door to say, what are you doing to our children and whatnot? But several of the stories are based on, thinly veiled, on literary antecedents. But you're welcome, Rob.
So really quickly, I just wanted to add something. Usually when we're open and when I was working in children's, around this time every year, I would read scary stories. I'd do a virtual campfire with the kids. And we'd make s'mores with marshmallow fluff and chocolate frosting. And I'd always read from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which we'll address later, because you have something very cool that's coming out soon related to that. But along those lines, every year I was afraid that was the year that I was going to get fired, because a parent was going to call and be like, Miss Jessica terrified my child with that story about the glass-eyed mother, which is my favorite.
I feel like that would happen.
Yeah.
More today than in the past.
I was going to say, nowadays, it might have happened.
I just had the kids telling me the stories weren't scary enough.
Oh, from a kid's point of view,
yeah. You're fine.
If the kids, yeah. People always say, what age are you afraid of the dark purple? And I was like, age is irrelevant. I mean, there were 7-year-olds who were like, oh, whatever. But adults are like, oh, it's all up to the individual. Kids are like, bring it on. The scarier, the better.
My brother, who's actually in the audience, is 10 years younger than me. And we used to watch it together, and it was terrifying. And we'll get to his question. But Stacey, do you want to take the next question in the chat? And then I'll take the next question in Q&A.
Are you taking Andy, Stephanie's question?
You take Andy, and I'll take Stephanie.
Okay. Andy asked, what is your favorite episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
I do have a favorite episode, and not because I think it's the best episode. It's probably up there. It's really good. But whenever someone asks me my opinion of the show, you have to remember that I'm probably the worst person to ask because I have so much more baggage. I have so many more insight into the show. So it's hard for me just to look at the show objectively. I think of what it took to make that show and all the pain and all the difficulty and all that kind of stuff. But it works out positively sometimes too, because at the beginning of the second season, second seasons are really good because everyone's figured out who everybody is. I'm talking about crew now, not talking about actors. Everybody figures out there's a shorthand. We're along the learning curve. And so now we can really start pumping on all cylinders. And the show that's my favorite is called The Tale of the Midnight Madness. It's about this vampire that comes out of the screen with Dr. Vink in the movie theater. And I think it's a good episode, but the reason it's really my favorite is because that was the first time that I felt like we were hitting on all cylinders. And it was like, this is the kind of show we can make. And so I was really proud of that show. So I think that's my favorite. And it's as much because I think it's a good episode as I have really great feelings about that episode and how it really kind of, I think, put us over the top into, wow, this is going to be a good show. So that was my favorite.
Thank you. We have a question from Stephanie who says, were you involved in the new Are You Afraid of the Dark that came out last year? And if so, will there be another season? I know the answer to this, but you go ahead.
I had nothing to do with it. Other than the fact that my partner and I created the show, I had nothing to do with it. As to why I wasn't involved, you would have to ask people at Nickelodeon. I mean, it's new people there. They're bringing in their own people to do it and whatnot. So they wanted nothing to do with me and my partner, anybody else, or anything else to do with the show. But we created the show. So if you liked it, you're welcome. If you didn't like it, I had nothing to do with it. But I do believe there are going to be more. I think they probably... there were going to be more, but everything shut down because of the coronavirus. So I think the original plan was to do more to be for this Halloween, but they shoot that show in Vancouver. And I think Vancouver is just starting to get back into production now. So maybe, hopefully they'll be making some more. But
all the best sci-fi shows are shot in Canada.
I was going to say a lot of
yes.
Shows are shot. I don't know why everyone calls Are You Afraid of the Dark a Canadian show. It's like, do you call Supernatural a Canadian show?
You have Deb Campbell on it. She's Canadian.
Well, there's a lot of people.
There are a lot. Yes, there are. She's just the one person who popped out that I was like, wait a second. Sydney Prescott was on Are You Afraid of the Dark before she was Sydney Prescott.
Like Ryan Gosling.
Yes, that's true.
It's like, so.
I was going to have him as my background photo. But I didn't think a lot of people would necessarily get it. So I was like, I got to put the pool monster, the corner.
You're right. Yeah, that's a little more iconic for the show. But okay. Yeah, we shot in Canada because that's where half the production budget came from. To get that money, you had to shoot in Canada. So that's why it was shot in Canada.
Okay, and then we have three questions that all came in at the same time, all from the same person. So I'm going to I'll ask all of them one at a time. So Pixie Pruitt asks, do you still keep in touch with any of the actors or directors? And then she asks, who were your favorite characters from the show? And my favorite question of hers, any chance of an Are You Afraid of the Dark convention?
I'm there.
I still in touch with some of the, I'm still in touch with a couple of the directors, Ron Oliver and David Winning, mostly a Facebook kind of thing. I write back and forth with Ross Hull all the time, who is Gary in the Midnight Society. That's pretty much, I mean, other than Facebook-y kind of stuff and just kind of chatting, whatnot, but in terms of hanging around a campfire someplace, not really. Because most of the people who worked on the show are in Canada. They're in Montreal. I live in Los Angeles. So it's not like, hey, let's get together for coffee. But I'm keeping up with a lot of the people on the show. More so the cast, more so the crew, because we have pretty much the same crew for 91 episodes. The cast are only in for a week. Midnight Society, a little bit more than that, because they were, each season they came in. The second question was, who is my favorite character? That's easy. It's the ones that, when I created them, I didn't expect to be doing anything more with them than the episode that I wrote them for, but I ended up loving them so much, I'm like, oh, I got to do more with these guys. So it's a toss up between Dr. Vink and Sardo.
Which is awesome, because our next question is going to be related to that.
Richard Dumont, who's Sardo. I'm in contact with him. We chat all the time. Great guy. Unfortunately, guy who played Dr. Vink just passed away last year. I better not be in contact with him. as for Are You Afraid of the Dark Convention? No tengo la menor idea. I don't know. I guess it would take some fan thing to do that. I just told the story in a podcast the other day. I had a really fun experience about a year ago. I went to a thing called Midsummer Scream. It was in Long Beach, California. And it's like a sci, it's like a, like SciCon, like your SciCon. It was a horror con. And so rather than science fiction stuff, it was all horror stuff. So the convention floor is great. All these haunted houses and monsters and all that kind of stuff. So they asked me if I would do an Are You Afraid of the Dark panel. So I got Ron Oliver, who directed several episodes, was really instrumental in the show. And my friend Scott Marcus was the narrator, the moderator. And the thing was fun about it is that we walked into this theater that was immense, and there's no one there. And I thought, oh no, no one's gonna show up for this. This is gonna be horrible. It's gonna be one of those things with like four people and they're like, oh, come on down to the front so we can hear it. Like, come on, I can't see it. Oh, this is terrible. So Ron and I are in the green room and we're catching up because we hadn't seen each other for a long time. And then it came time to come out onto the stage. And Nickelodeon had sent a little kind of a teaser, 3-minute piece with highlights from the show to kind of open up the thing. And it opens up with the opening titles of the show, that really great opening title sequence. And Ron and I are standing in the wings thinking, this is really going to be embarrassing because we can chat with each other for an hour or so or whatever. But then suddenly, that opening title came on and the place erupted. It was jam-packed. It was standing room only. Everyone had come over to see this thing. And so Ron and I got to sit with Scott, got to sit on the stage and do like we're talking about right now in front of thousands of really, really rabid fans. That's the closest to an Are You Afraid of the Dark reunion or convention that I've ever been part of, but it was really great. So if anybody wants to do it, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who would want to go.
Hear that, everybody?
To attend, but I mean people involved in the show would probably want to go.
Okay, so the next question is from my brother Alex. Hi Alex. I'm curious what kind of the thought process or reasons, which you sort of addressed earlier, were for having reoccurring motifs or characters like Sardo, Mr. Sardo, no Mr. accent on the dough, that's what it was.
Well, Are You Afraid of the Dark was an anthology show, which meant every episode was different, which meant 91 different stories. I didn't have a writing staff. You're looking at the writing staff. But the reason for that was because there was, other than the campfires, there was really no continuity to the show. There was no continuing story. There are no continuing characters. So the beauty of that was that I was able to, every season I put out the call to writers to say, do you have any good ideas for an episode? So I couldn't have thought of all those episodes myself. There's no chance, there's too many. So writers would come to me with all these great ideas. And out of those ideas, I would pick the ones that I liked, and then I'd work with that writer to write the episode and make the show. So, and I say all that because 91 episodes is a lot of stories. So it's like anything we can do, how are we gonna continue this? What's gonna go? With Sardo and Dr. Vink, Dr. Vink became kind of a fun thing among the cast. I have to say that our crew was so fabulous because, as I said, so many people worked on the show from beginning to end. And we all got to know each other well. We all lived together. I mean, it was all in Montreal, a little town. It was really great. And we used to sit around, like on the set, shooting whatever we were shooting. And people would say, what else can we do with Dr. Vink? It's like, how about if Dr. Vink was a chef? And I think that was Lorette LeBlanc who came up with that idea. I think it was like, what if he ran? So in the first, in the Phantom Cab, he was a mad scientist who lived in a hut in the woods. What if, and then in Midnight Madness, he was a filmmaker that did. So Dr. Vink could have all these different persona. And I think it was Lorette that said, what if he's a chef? I'm like, that's a great idea. He could have a restaurant. And that's where I came up with the idea for the Dangerous Soup, Dr. Vink. And then another one, it's like, what if he was a hairstylist? So in Cutter's Treasure, he had the wild boar coiffure. Everything wild boar was the continuing thing because he had the brain of a wild boar in Phantom Cab. And in Dangerous Soup, it was called the Wild Boar Cafe or the something like that. So we kept that motif going. So anything you could do to keep, because it was anthology, to keep reminding viewers that, yeah, it's all the same show. Like we referred to Zeebo the Clown many a times in the episode. In this one episode, a kid comes in with a new video game and he says, I got the new Zeebo's Funhouse game. So it's little Easter eggs for people who know the show. It's like, oh, there's Zeebo the Clown, it's his funhouse. So yeah, anything we can do to kind of tie it all together, and especially if you have two great characters like Sardo and Vink, you got to milk that, man.
And I like that they were sort of gray. Like sometimes they were really mean and sometimes they weren't as mean.
Sardo was always mean. He was consistent throughout. He was, the whole concept of him is he's this guy who, for whatever reason, has this shop with all these things in it, and all he wants to do is make a buck. And so he will say anything to anybody to sell these things. He'll make this stuff up, not realizing, oh my God, they're really haunted. They're really real. So I just love that idea. And Richard Dumont was so good with, in so many scenes where he would be like trying to explain to somebody what it is, you could tell he's making it up as he's going along. You know, Sardo is making it up. It's like, this is a ancient Persian victory box. You know, he's making it up. And Richard played it so well, just so he can make a buck. And then, oh, surprise, it really is an ancient Persian victory box that lets you travel through time or something like that. Vink was, he always had a devious side too. He's not a good guy. It was kind of odd, and I brought it back in Cutter's Treasure, that he actually kind of had a softer side in that. He actually helped the kid in Cutter's Treasure. And I got pushback on that. I said, yeah, how come Vink's a nice guy all of a sudden? But both of those guys were technically villains. Yeah, even though they weren't the ultimate villainous thing. I guess Vink was the villainous thing in Phantom Cab, but there were other villainous things going on. They were always the conduit that brought the villainy out. But they were fun.
Yes.
Okay, we have a question from Brett, who says, "Do you think Are You Afraid of the Dark could still work as a children's horror show today?"
Well, ask Nickelodeon. They're probably making more episodes. So yeah, I think so. I mean, I think for the longest time after I finished the 91, I was pitching other shows. Not similar, but kids' horror shows. And with a fellow band named Alec Griffith and I, we created a show called The Strange Legacy of Cameron Crews. Starred Jesse McCartney, who was a singer, if you know him. And that was going to be on Nickelodeon to kind of take the place of Are You Afraid of the Dark? And this project went on forever and forever and forever and forever. And then finally they passed on it. We're just not making dramas anymore. That was in that period where all the kids' TV was like, not counting animation, but going to live action was all comedy all the time, all these really, I won't put a value judgment on, but all kind of multi-camera stage. But suddenly Nickelodeon became like the Disney Channel, and I don't write that stuff, which is why I started writing books actually, because I write drama, and that's what I wanted to write. But things are coming back. Things are mostly because of the streamers, because there's more opportunities for things. That stuff is coming back again. So yeah, sure, I think there's, I mean, look at Stranger Things. Stranger Things is a, even though it wasn't made for kids, kids have picked it up. So
absolutely. We love it. At Syosset Library, we did like a Stranger Things escape room before last year when COVID wasn't a thing.
It was a little edgier than an Afraid of the Dark level, but yeah, it's I think that has come back now.
So I have a question from Barry, who also did ask this in the Q&A, so I'm going to address it because he asked it first in the chat. M. Night Shyamalan has said that his favorite episode, The Dream Girl, was an inspiration for the movie The Sixth Sense. When did you first find out about this? I assume it's not right now, and what did you think of
it? No, it's not right now. I found out about it only a couple of years ago. Somebody pointed it out. It was written someplace in some social media thing. However, when my wife and I went to see The Sixth Sense, and when it was first out, obviously, and that very first scene, if you remember it, Bruce Willis and his wife are at home, and he hears somebody downstairs, an intruder, a noise, and he goes downstairs, and it's an intruder, and the intruder shoots him, and he falls down, and he's bleeding out, and his wife is holding him, fade out. As soon as that fade out happened, and then it came out like 1 year later, or something like that, I leaned over to my wife and I said, he's going to be a ghost for the rest of the movie. And she was like, get out of here. No, no, he's not. But then for the rest of the movie, she's like, I hate you. I hate you. How did you know? And I said, I only used that device like 8 times on Are You Afraid of the Dark? Forget the Dream Girl. The very first episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark that I wrote, back when we were still trying to sell the show, was called The Tale of the Prom Queen. And The Prom Queen was all about these two kids are trying to hunt down, or three kids, they were trying to hunt down if a urban legend was true about a girl who was killed on prom night, and every prom night she comes back to haunt the cemetery. So it's two guys and a girl. And at the end, it turns out, they solve the mystery, but it turns out the girl was the ghost the whole time.
So, and that's a Vanishing Hitchhiker story.
Yes, it is a common thing. I think we, with Are You Afraid of the Dark, I think we did it the best in The Dream Girl. I wish the show had been a little bit longer. I could say that about all the episodes. I mean, the individual episodes. When you think about it, Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes, a half hour show is really only like a 21 minute and change show. So then when you take away 2 minutes for Midnight Society, suddenly now it's under a 20 minute show. So we had to tell these stories, introduce the characters, introduce the situation, get the scares, build scares, have a twist, climax the whole thing in like 19, 20 minutes. That's really fast. So, and there were some episodes that were some of my favorite episodes that I just felt like, oh, if only we had like 2 more minutes, we could have built the tension a little bit more. And The Dream Girl is one of those episodes where it's like once he realizes, oh my God, I'm dead. Spoiler alert. Oh my God, I've been a dead for this whole episode. It would have been fun, like they did with The Sixth Sense, to go back and see the scenes that were set up. David Winning directed this thing and did a marvelous job. Went back, all the scenes where he was there with his sister. His sister's the only one who could see him. But they're interacting with other people who were kind of ignoring him. His mother was one, their boss was one, a couple of girls in the bowling alley were one. And they were just like, oh, it's snotty. But it's because they couldn't see him. So it would have been nice to kind of go back and kind of quickly revisit those scenes to show, remember, that's really what happened. He was a ghost that whole time. So we probably did it best in that episode. But and I found out that it was inspired The Sixth Sense just a couple of years ago, where somebody wrote to me and say, hey, did you know? I'm like, no, I didn't. But I get it. What's next?
Yeah, Stacey, you want to grab there's a comment question.
Yes. And sorry, I'm reading through some of the
chat. Know, it's like there's so much. It's so exciting.
A lot of like random quotes from the show. Chelsea says, I'm 37 and I still watch them. I was saying to Jessica before we even started this that I was just like, yeah, you know, like back before, like I just got like on a kick to like rewatch some old stuff. And I was just like, you want to know what? I'm going to watch like clips and episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark on YouTube and just like do this and be creepy sitting in my room in the dark trying to be like, oh my God, I remember this. Oh my God. And of course the one I started was with the lovely photo behind me. I'm like looking as if he's really behind me.
That's pretty gruesome, that guy.
It terrified me of pools, and I love swimming. It was him and like the fear of sharks coming out of the water.
Well, with that episode, I actually directed that episode. It was written by a fellow named Will Dixon, who also directed several episodes. Mm-hmm. One of the things I tried to do, especially towards the beginning of the episode, was kind of do a Jawsian type thing where you go to the POV of whatever it is under the water that you don't see who it is. But I'll tell a funny story. The pool we're in was not very deep. It wasn't like a big high dive pool. So to get a shot, you know, there are those kids in that raft and floating in the pool, and to get the monster's POV underwater up there, you couldn't get far enough away because the raft was so big and you couldn't get that deep in the pool. So what I did was I had the production designer go out and get like a little G.I. Joe raft, like a little thing this size. And we made sure it was the exact same color as the big one and all that kind of stuff. So when you put that floating in the pool, suddenly it was like, oh, you know, that looks like you're far enough away and you're really deep and coming up. And then at one point, I wish I still had the shot because it's hysterical. And I thought, okay, now there's the scene where the kid is kind of leaning over the side and he's putting his hand in the water. And I thought, so we basically took a G.I. Joe, a 12-inch G.I. Joe, and we put him in the little floaty raft, and we had his hand sticking over the side. And I thought, oh, we'll go up there and we'll see the silhouette of this guy, and we'll make sure the water's ripply, and we'll look it up there. But no one will know it's G.I. Joe. when I looked at the shot afterwards in the dailies, looked at the shot, oh, there it is. And we got up there, it looked like G.I. Joe. it was terrible. I burst out laughing. It's like, oh, okay, we're not going to use that shot. So we only used the empty raft shot in the thing. But we tried to do it. And we also tried to do it, or I tried to do a Jawsian, kind of like that first scene in Jaws where the kid's in the pool and he's getting pulled underneath by the monster. That was an actor by the name of Jay Baruchel, who's gone on to do many, many things. He's a terrific actor. And this was, I think, the first time he was ever in front of a camera, and I drowned him. So his mother on the side of the pool, like, what are you doing? And he was really selling it, too, because we had something tied to his ankle, like a little rope. And we pull it, and he go under.
Oh, my God.
In the chat, somebody says Jay is bae.
I pulled up the BuzzFeed article about this particular episode, and they're like, this is what nightmares are made out of, because not even 5 minutes, something grabs him, and they're like, yes, that is also baby Jay Baruchel.
So I wanted to take the next question, but go ahead.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, just so you know, that, and I always say this to little kids too, I say, just know the show is really scary, if you're really getting scared, just imagine that I'm standing right next to the camera while this is happening. I was in the water with Jay, just literally floating 3 feet from him, making sure, oh my God, hope to God he doesn't drown. So he was fine, he was fine.
So Nick wants to know, because I'm so glad that this was brought up again, what is the upcoming related to scary stories to tell in the dark? Would you like to talk about the anthology?
Yeah, a wonderful author and a friend of mine by the name of John Mayberry, who is a really accomplished, scary writer, author, Bram Stoker Award winning type guy, and he's a member of the Horror Writers Association, which I think I am too. I think I used to be. I think I stopped paying my dues or something. But he came up with this idea. As you mentioned before, there was that really great, I don't know how many books were done in the 80s, Scary Stories in the Dark, but there was a book of short stories of really scary stories for young people. And John, together with the Horror Writers Association, said, you know, maybe let's dig this out of the grave. let's bring this back. So John put out a call to all his friends who write this kind of stuff and say, would you consider writing a short story, a short scary story for middle grade readers that we're going to put in this anthology as an homage to scary stories? They're not calling it Scary Stories in the Dark. It's called Don't Turn Out the Lights or something like that. Available for pre-sale now. So if you go to Amazon, it's available. So I wrote a story. He said, do you have any short stories that you could do? And I was like, you know, I actually do. My daughter, who's now 17, my wife and I love to hike and camp and backpack and whatnot. My daughter likes to camp. She doesn't like to backpack. She doesn't like to hike because she's like, why are we walking? Why are we walking there? Can't we just be there? So whenever I'd get her to go on a hike with us, inevitably, she would say, Dad, tell me a story. And I'm off duty. I have to think of a story. This is my day off. I have to think of a story. But that's the only way I could keep her involved in hiking. And so we passed by this weeping willow tree. Oh, what I would say to her is, okay, I'll tell you a story, but you have to come up with two things. You can come up with anything you want. They don't have to relate to each other. It could be a hammer and a cell phone. Whatever it happens to be, tell me those two things and I'll come up with a story about it. Because it's way easier to have a place to start than tell me a story. Where do we start? I don't know. So on this one hike, we went by this weeping willow tree that was kind of swaying in the breeze. It's just, tell me a story about that tree. And so I, on the spot, I came up with the story, which I originally called The Weeper, but I couldn't call it The Weeper for John because someone else had a story in this anthology that had weeping in the title and whatnot. So he's like, can you come up with another title? So I called it The Green Grabber, and it was about this haunted tree that was taking kids and eating kids. And it was a story I came up with as I was hiking with my daughter once, desperately to keep her interested in hiking. And so I was like, I'll write that story. So you just read it, Jessica, right? So that was where the story came from. It's a hike in the Sierras.
It was very, very good. I loved it. And I'm excited to read the rest of it.
Me too. I need to get my copy.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You don't get ARCs, advanced reader's copies?
I don't know. There's so many authors involved. They would have to like send that out. So no, I haven't gotten one yet.
Okay. Yeah, librarians, we subscribe to something called NetGalley, I guess, because they want us to promote the books and, you know, be order them if we think they're awesome. So this is...
I get ARCs of my books, but if you're only this much author of the book, they probably are like, yeah, we're not to send you an ARC.
All right. Stacy, you had a question you were going to ask next from...
Yes,
from... Chelsea or...
Paulina. And okay. Chelsea. I'll do Paulina. Paulina asked, will we ever be able to see the show on any streaming service like Netflix, Amazon, etc.?
I don't know for sure, but I doubt it. Because this gets into a little bit of inside baseball showbiz, but... The deal that my partner and I made with Nickelodeon is so lousy that essentially Nickelodeon can play that show until it falls apart and they never pay any residuals, they never pay anything. And so the only time they actually have to pay out is if they license it to somebody else. So if they sell that show to Netflix, suddenly they've got a lot of people lined up to say, hey, whoa, you may owe some money on that. So, and there's no need to, they will keep it forever. I know people and friends that work at Netflix and like, can we get Are You Afraid of the Dark? I'm like, good luck. I don't think so. They're going to want to keep it themselves and reboot their series and do all that kind of stuff. So I doubt. I never say never to anything, but I doubt it.
It's funny because they had a show on Netflix and I don't know if it was ever renewed called Creeped Out, which reminded me very slightly.
Really?
It was almost like... It reminded me a bit of Are You Afraid of the Dark, but maybe with a little bit of Black Mirror because it had like a technology spin.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Still trying. I've got a series to go like this that's ready with young adult things about a haunted library of unfinished.
I would be, now you have a young adult book. And again, I don't want to neglect our people, but you do have a young adult book about library with a library in the title coming out.
No, oh, it's been out. It's called The Library. It's a middle grade story, and it's about a haunted library. And so I've pitched that to Netflix as a series. And every time I go there, it's like new people. I don't know. You never know. It might happen.
Okay.
Jessica, you want to get the next question?
I think, who was your favorite? Chelsea says, who was your favorite member of the Midnight Society? Did we?
Ooh, that's like saying, who's your favorite kid?
Yeah.
No, they're all my favorites.
Okay, do you want to, let's see. It's so, there's so many questions and comments.
Yeah, there's so, which is awesome. Thank Justin, you everybody for all your Justin, questions and comments.
Justin says, any inspiration behind the name Zeebo?
Oh, that's interesting.
Did we stump you? Did we get a new one?
No, I've thought that myself. It's like, gee, where did that name come from? You know, it's kind of corny. You know, between all the stuff I've written, you have to often come up with names for wacky things or science fiction things and whatnot. And it's always a challenge to be kind of interesting and unique and not corny and you've seen it a million times. Like my rule of thumb is if I'm doing something science fiction, never use the letter Z, because, you know, Zardoz, you know, it sounds so cliche and whatnot. But Zeebo just sounded, it sounded like every cliche clown you could think of is Zeebo. what's the clown on Modern Family? Fizbo. You know, it's like a clown. I wasn't trying to be unique. I was trying to be more cliche with it than anything else.
And then next question's from Rob. Were there any guest star actors that stick out to you? He remembers Gilbert Gottfried in an interview with Fangoria joking that all child actors all had drinking problems.
It sounds like Gilbert. They did. I didn't know about it. I actually didn't work with Gilbert. Ron Oliver directed that episode. The two that stand out for me, I work with Bobcat Goldthwaite. I directed a show called The Tale of the Final Wish. And one of the things, he's such a sweetheart of a guy and so much fun to work with. And I felt so bad for him, because if you ever saw that episode, it's called The Tale of the Final Wish. He played the Sandman. And I wrote that script too. And it's about this little girl who goes into this fantasy. It's a world of scary fairy tales, essentially. And the bad guy is the Sandman. And in writing the part for the Sandman, this was before it was Bob, I had him saying all these nonsensical things. You know, these kind of weird, rhymey, made up fairy tale sounding things. Now, if you've ever tried to act before, you know that when you're in a scene, the back and forth of a scene, usually it's easy to remember the dialogue, because if someone says, how are you? Chances are your answer is going to be something like, oh, right, no, I'm fine. You know, whatever. It's like, but when your dialogue has no relation to anything this little girl who he's with is saying, it's really hard to remember all that stuff. Add to that, Bobcat, I don't know if he does it anymore, but he had that voice that he put on in his act where it was really kind of a raspy kind of, it's very funny. I mean, he put on this really weird voice, and he did the Sandman in that voice, which was absolutely shredding his vocal cords. And the poor guy, so we'd have to have honey and lemon for him all the time, because and he couldn't remember the lines because it was so hard. And then it was making it worse because there was a little girl who was wonderful, who was opposite him. Little girls, kids, I don't know if they have a drinking problem or not, but they have no problem memorizing things. So she'd be there, it's like, no, I say this, and then you say this, and then I say this, and then you say this, and he's just like, ugh. <Little girl. laughs> but he tried so hard, and he did a fabulous job, but the poor guy just shredded his vocal cords. The other one that I remember, I didn't direct him, but I did meet him and bring him onto the show, a fellow by the name of Frank Gorshin, who, to us old-timers, remember him, he played the Riddler in the Batman TV series. So it was fun to be with him and talk with him. And I actually only met, I had lunch with him in Los Angeles before I sent him up to Montreal to be in the show. But just, I love meeting with people who have been around longer than me that have stories to tell. And that was a real fabulous thing for me. So those are the two that jumped to mind quickly that I had a really great experience with.
There's a comment in the chat from Vorn who says that, he says, DJ, I can't hear the words hi there without imagining Bobcat under my bed. Frowny face, exclamation point.
He had no problem with that line.
Justin also, it was related to the Zeebo. Is the Carney in Laughing in the Dark Zeebo's spirit?
Oh, I think I'm losing you here a little bit.
Oh, can you hear me? Oh.
Now I can.
Okay. Is the Carney in Laughing in the Dark Zeebo's spirit was the question.
Of course. Of course it was. I'll add to that something I saw. It's really fun, you know, with people writing stuff online and asking questions about the show and whatnot. I saw something a couple of weeks ago that I know the answer to, and I don't know if that person who wrote that is here today, but I'm going to answer your question. Aaron Tager, who played Dr. Vink, when we shot The Phantom Cab, that was the first episode we shot that season. His hair and his beard were his. They were Aaron Tager's original hair and beard. He was so good, I asked him to be the carny in Laughing in the Dark as well. But to do that, he had to be clean shaven and have short hair. So Aaron, trooper that he is, he shaved off his beard, he clipped the hair, and he also, I'll say this in a second. So he was clean shaven. So now I make the choice. It's like, ooh, Dr. Vink was so great. Let's bring him back in future episodes. Well, Aaron never grew his beard back. He never grew his hair long again. So for every Dr. Vink episode after Phantom Cab, that was a fake beard and fake hair with extensions and whatnot. In the Phantom Cab, that was really his. And the thing that I love so much, there's so much I love about Aaron, but Aaron, of 91 episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, Aaron delivered what is my favorite absolute line of the entire series. And it's a great line. I wrote it. It's a great line, but it's the way he did it made it so great. It's at the end of Laughing in the Dark, and he comes out and he just says, "It's the most fun in the park when you're laughing in the dark." That is my favorite. And the term Laughing in the Dark was actually, it was a spook house that was in a amusement park near where I grew up. And as a little kid, I was always afraid to go into that spook house. It was called Laughing in the Dark. So that's where, and in fact, at the beginning of the tale, Betty Ann says the name of the amusement park was Playland. And that was the name of the park, Rye Playland, near where I grew up. You guys from Syosset, so you know, it's in Rye, New York is Playland. So that's where Laughing in the Dark was.
Oh, very cool.
Aaron, that's really cool.
It's a good thing it was an action part, because that would be screaming in the dark.
I just read a book. Now, I'm going to bore people for a second because you haven't been there. I just read a book called Action Park about the history of Action Park, because I was one of the guys who got injured there.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I have scars. Well, that's paint from today, but I have scars from the park. It was like reading my own thing. Like, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I fell off of that ride. Yep, I did that. Traction Park.
Yeah, or Class Action Park.
Class Action Park. I first heard the term Action Park in the emergency. I first heard the term Action Park in the emergency room as I'm getting stitched up. So if any of you out there don't know what we're talking about, there's also Johnny Knoxville just made a movie.
It was
called Adventure Park.
Yeah.
It was based on it. It was the world's most dangerous amusement park.
There's also a video and a podcast called Defunct Land, which has a whole episode about Action Park and how many people it injured. So getting back to the questions, Schuber wants to know, did any characters from Are You Afraid of the Dark influence characters in your books, like Pendragon series, Silo, etc.?
Oh, interesting. Well, I've never been asked that. And the answer is, unless I'm forgetting something off the top of my head, no. I never took any direct character. I did that once with a character in one of my Pendragon books. I made a movie called Tower of Terror for Disney. And I took a character from Tower of Terror and put him in a Pendragon book. But I never did it with Are You Afraid of the Dark? Maybe I will.
Chelsea asks, were you involved in the computer game The Tale of Orfeo's Curse?
Not very much. With all the kind of Are You Afraid of the Dark spin-off stuff, whether it's the books or the game, the board game, or the that Orfeo's Curse, they consulted me on stuff and they asked stuff, and especially because also the Midnight Society was in that that game. The kids were brought down to Florida and shot live interstitial stuff of the game. So it was kind of looking like, and it looked like an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark. So they consulted with me a lot, but in terms of the actual story, not a whole lot. They sent it to me. I don't know if I read it that closely, frankly, but I thought it was great. Boy, and at the time, you look at it now and it's, it's very dated because of the technology, but oh my God, at the time it was pretty cutting edge. It was really pretty cool. And it's a fun game too. Ever get a chance to find the old CD of it? It's really pretty cool.
Stephanie, I took this question because it is from her 8-year-old son. She says, the tale of the shiny red bike is my 8-year-old's favorite episode, and he wants to know what your favorite part of that episode was, or favorite Are You Afraid of the Dark scene in general. I know we kind of touched upon this, but for a kid?
The thing that I, again, a lot of times when you ask the question of me, what's your favorite thing? It's not necessarily what's my favorite thing that I'm looking at. It's my, I'm thinking of the whole process of making it. And one of the things, and that's one of my favorite episodes, I should say, Shine Your Red Bicycle. It was wonderful. I don't remember how it was written. For those of you who don't know the episode, it's about a kid who is being haunted by the ghost of his friend from 8 years before. And it comes to find out his friend 8 years before was killed. And the guy who the episode is about is now a little bit older, and he's being haunted by the ghost of his dead friend. We find out why. So I don't remember how it was scripted as to how the kid was going to die. But in driving around, we shot the show in Montreal, and driving around Montreal, our production location manager would take me to all these cool places. And she took me to this thing. I didn't know what it was. It was like a sluice. It was like a drain where you could do this big crank of a thing and it would open up a dam and water would shoot down this trough. And then it would come out as a waterfall. And I'm like, this is cool. I don't remember what was on the page, but this should be how the kid is killed. This is cool, because then we can see the guy drive up on his bike and opening up the thing while the kid's foot is stuck underneath there, knowing the waters and the water coming. So that was my favorite thing about that episode, is that we found this really cool thing that existed. It's not like the writer, I'm forgetting who the writer was. Forgive me, I forgot his name. But it wasn't like he thought of this sluice thing where the dam opened up and water came through. That wasn't in the script. That we found that. So things like that I really love. It's like, well, what a cool thing. And I thought it worked pretty well. And it's one of my favorite episodes too.
Okay, I'm trying to go through what is a new question, because some of these, okay, from Vorn asks, do you have a favorite monster from the series? And did you know that the Tale of the Badge would be the last episode of the fifth series? Tucker imitates Gary in the intro, and many interpret this as foreshadowing of his role in series 6 and 7.
Ooh, that's putting a lot in there. That actually, I don't know how it was released on DVD, but that wasn't our 65th episode. Our 65th, we always thought, we knew once the show like got into his second season or whatnot, the plan always was do 65 episodes. That was the plan. We always knew we were going to do 65 episodes. What I planned out to be the final episode, episode number 65, and when it aired, it was the final episode. It was the Tale of the Night Shift. And there are a couple of Easter eggs in that show that spoke to the fact that it was the final episode. For one, I directed all the Midnight Society episodes in season one. After that, I was getting way too much work. I had too much to do. So I had other people direct the episodes for the rest of the run of the show, except for the Tale of the Night Shift, because we were thinking that was going to be our final episode. I came back to direct the campfire for the Tale of the Night Shift, and I wrote that episode as well. And in that episode, the thing that made the Midnight Society special was that, if you remember, the thing was all about Gary wanting to tell Samantha that he liked her, but he didn't think that she liked him, and he was nervous about it, and Tucker saying, you gotta talk to her. So by the end of the episode, as everyone's leaving, I tried to give everyone a curtain call. Visually, it didn't work out as well as I wanted to, but because it was their last time on camera. The show was over. But I left it with Gary and Samantha, where Gary finally says, I like you, Samantha. And Samantha says, oh, I like you too. Oh, that's really cool. And Gary's all excited. So he's ready to put out the fire. And she says, no, let's just stay. Let's let it burn a little while longer. So it's the only episode we did not put the campfire out on. So the last image is they sit down and it tilts down to the burning fire. And that I always intended to be the final episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, which was the fire doesn't go out. It'll burn forever. So there's my last episode thing. The other thing was in the tale itself, it's about a vampire who's in a hospital and he's killing people. The very last image of the tale is there are a couple characters on screen and they walk off, and in the background there's a door closing on a hospital room, and on the door is the number 65, because that was our 65th episode. And if you listen really closely, but you really listen closely, they actually, the Are You Afraid of the Dark theme is playing as if someone's watching Are You Afraid of the Dark in that hospital. So I don't know why Badge is considered the last. Badge was not the last episode. Badge, I don't know what it was, but the last one was to be the Night Shift. And then 2 years later, they say, hey, can you make some more? I'm like, okay, fine. So let me do 13, 22. So it wasn't the last episode. But it was the last episode for that incarnation of the Midnight Society. So that kind of made it their last moment.
We've got, like, not That's a lot awesome. Of time left and so many questions.
I know, but to follow up on that, Warren says, that makes so much sense now. Thanks, DJ, and you've blown my mind.
David Winning says that you were a great boss, nothing but great memories in Montreal.
David Winning is the guy who directed The Dream Girl.
Nice.
Hi, Dave. And Shiny Red Bicycle.
let's see. This is a really good one to close out with, I think. Can you speak to how each member of the Midnight Society has their own favorite storytelling style or genre?
I kind of tried to do that. I don't know how well I succeeded. Let's go through. Frank's stories always had to do with guy adventures. Frank is kind of a macho guy. He always had guy adventures. And he created Dr. Vink, so he always told the Dr. Vink stories. Gary's father supposedly ran a magic shop. And in fact, in the Tale of the Super Specs, he and Kristen actually are in the magic shop. So that's how he created Sardo, Gary, the character. So Gary's episodes usually had something to do with magic. Kristen's episode, she was kind of the girliest girl of the group. Her episodes always had some kind of romantic thing to do with it. And Samantha ended up carrying on that tradition going forward. Kiki was the tomboy of the group. So she always had some kind of aggressive, strong girl story that she told. But the favorite for me, I can't even remember with the next incarnation, the Midnight Society. But my favorite one was Betty Ann, frankly. Because Betty Ann was written as, she was kind of modeled after a friend of mine from back when I was a kid, named Betty Ann. If you're watching Betty Ann, kind of named after you. And Betty Ann, actually the actual Betty Ann probably had more of a caustic sense of humor than my Betty Ann. But Betty Ann was portrayed as like the sweetest, the meekest, the she's always the peacemaker of the group. She's always getting them together. And her tales were the most vicious, bizarre, oddball, oh my God, how did that come out of you kind of stuff. So I always try to give her the most macabre stories because it was just so different than what her character was like. So those are the main ones. And I tried to live up to that, which was tough because it wasn't like I said, oh, I have to go up with a Betty Ann story. It was more, I really had to get stories from people. I'm like, okay, who's this fit with best? And I said, well, it's like a Betty Ann story. So my favorite storyteller character to the kind of stories they told is probably Betty Ann.
It's funny because I'm seeing a Locker 22 was an underrated gem. So my favorite that terrified me was the Tale of the Whispering Walls, because what was going on in that? I had a friend who got married on leap year on a Friday. I'm like, oh my God, is it under a full moon? Like, it was crazy. That one was nuts. And somebody else mentioned that as well. People love Betty Ann in the comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Betty Ann is the GOAT, greatest of all time. Love that.
Just because they're just the oddest stories, which is so antithetical to her character. So yeah,
All right. Well, I, on behalf of Virtual Syosset Virtual Public Library and Turn the Page podcast, Stacy and myself would like to thank our audience. We're sorry we didn't get to anyone's questions.
Seriously,
you guys
have been so interactive, and there's so many questions
I should say
that were unanswered.
If you guys have questions for me, you can always, I answer all my email, Facebook, and all that kind of stuff. So if you do have a question, a burning question you really got to know, just write to me. Go to my website, djmcampbooks.com, and there's a thing that says email DJ, and send me an email. You got to know, I can answer.
100% true, because when COVID started and Stacy and I were trying to figure out like what we were going to do with this virtual programming, mm-hmm. and I emailed you, I didn't think you were going to get back to me. And then you're like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. So he's awesome. Read his books, get the upcoming anthology.
He's involved with so much more. Yeah, oh, Anthony's met you three times. He loves you. Such a
Anthony. Oh, I can tell you a funny story about Anthony real quick. I was on a Pendragon tour and in Meridian, Connecticut, in Connecticut. And normally it's like a lot of little kids that are there. And there are these three really big guys that came in and were sitting there like this. I thought, ooh, these guys are kind of scary. They have something against me. And then everyone came and got their book signed and whatnot. Everybody's leaving. And they stayed there. I'm like, oh God, am I in trouble? What did I do? What not? And Anthony came. And these guys were already afraid of the dark fans. And I've seen them a number of times. Hi, Anthony. And a number of other things. They're the sweetest guys going. It was really wonderful. But for a couple of seconds, I was like, ooh, should I have somebody escort me to my car? These guys are coming after me.
Well, thanks again. Once again, this was, I guess we're going to do our traditional podcast sign-off because this is a podcast.
Oh, yeah, we can.
Okay, so once again, this was Jessica, and my librarian co-host was
Stacy.
And our special guest was
EJ McHale.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, DJ. Yes. Bye.
That was awesome. So much fun. Oh, wait. Let me. Oh, no. Sorry. I have all the different windows up. Gonna stop recording.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.